Where are we going? Welcome to this exclusive podcast produced by Spirit Watch Ministries that will show where life in our darkening times is now turning and how you can avoid the detours of deception through the hope of biblical truth. The Lord Jesus in Matthew 24 warned us over 2 millennia ago and how urgently we need to heed him now. Our host is Pastor Rafael Martinez, a seasoned Northwest Indiana-based minister, intercessor, and counter-cult apologist who will help you discern the journey of change we're all on as the last day of the last days now winds down. For more information, check out our Facebook page and our website at spiritwatch.org. Now, here's Pastor Rafael.
Thank you for downloading. This is Rafael Martinez, a minister in the Church of God Cleveland Movement, and I'm the director of Spirit Watch Ministries, an outreach of Christian discernment since 1993, now based in Hammond, Indiana. This podcast is called Where Are We Going? And it's our ongoing exploration of the depths of depravity found in our fallen world today, manifesting through religiously and psychologically abusive cultism. Part of the recovery from cultism is a return back to that which was lost to it. And we make no apology for upholding this simple principle. Shattered faith can be rebuilt, but must be understood for what it is and what it does to those it grievously wounds. Over the years, we've used research, interviews, and conversations with those who are directly impacted by cults to give our podcast the unique voices they have. Our podcasting, therefore, enables us to gain a Christian perspective as well into some very dark worlds of authoritarian spiritual and social slavery, for which, we hold, the light of Jesus Christ alone can guide the way out to true freedom, true peace, and true purpose. His imminent return to this world of woe is heralded by the rise of the slickest of deceptions as he warned his disciples in Matthew chapter 24 in the New Testament. We are only doing as he's commanded there, charging that you take heed that no man deceive you. Our podcast today continues with a series of interviews we had with Michael S. Black, formerly Michael Shamblin, the son of the late cult leader Gwen Shamblin Lara, who was the founder of the Way Down Workshop and the self-appointed leader and prophet of the Remnant Fellowship Church of Franklin, Tennessee. We've said from day one of our ministry that we have no interest in contributing to the last days of deception now at hand, and we've always preached, published, and defended biblical Christian truth and perspective that shows it for what it is. Our podcast today now continues with a perspective on the abuses and outrages that this movement has committed in the name of God, which were highlighted in the HBO Max docuseries, The Way Down, that our ministry helped to launch in 2021, the same year Gwen met her maker and stood before the judgment seat of Christ himself. We're thankful for Michael's contributions today.
Right. But yeah, you would hope the deals would be better. You would hope they would be treating you, you'd be getting, you know, more leeway in costs and just the, you know, just the stuff of life, you know.
But that's why it was easy to abuse that because of the closed environment, because of the authority line. That did make it easier to abuse that type thing because you don't question your leaders, right? You don't. Members joining don't question their small group leaders.
Mm-hmm. Right. Because the authority line, well, obviously, if somebody's over authority, you, that they're obviously going to know better than you.
They know better. Exactly. They know better than you.
Yeah.
That's hammered into your head immediately, especially to the children. They're growing up that way.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's unthinkable that a child would know more than their parent or a new member would know more than their small group leader.
And this was how Remnant proceeded throughout the year, through the 2000s, you know, and it grew and it put, you know, you hear there's all kinds of really interesting, very interesting documentaries out nowadays on cults and very questionable isms everywhere. And one term that's very well coined describes people in such groups as shiny, happy people. And that's what Remnant became. It had no other way to appear. All the children were perfect. All the women were beautiful and wore their hair the same way as Gwen. All the men were just, the great providers. I mean, it was the perfect utopian community. But
as it appeared, and I always felt that was, to me, it looked that way from Franklin Road. Mm-hmm. It looked to me, and I'll just say it like this, I guess the best way I can describe it. To me, Remnant is like a picture of a church. And by that, it's not a real church. It's a picture of a church. Mm-hmm. And it was all a stage. Instead of the sanctuary, I called it like the studio, the stage room, uh-huh, with the lights and the cameras.
Uh-huh.
That's how it became to me.
Right.
As I started seeing it more and more, this was a show. This was everything was appearance.
Mm-hmm. It was Thomas Kincaid portrait.
Yes, it was a portrait. Remnant is a portrait of a church. It's not, there's no substance. It's not a real church. Mm-hmm. And that's what I don't think a lot of people visiting understand, that this was literally designed masterfully over a long period of time by a woman who, she looked at a picture of a church. She wanted it to look that way.
Mm-hmm.
And it was not, it was skin deep. And the more you get in, the closer you get in, the more you realize this is not what I thought it was.
Yeah. Yeah. She promoted that authority.
It goes perfectly along with the weight loss. It's appearance. Mm-hmm. You can even make a very strong case, I guess spiritually. I may not claim to be Christian necessarily, and I'm not theologically trained, but you can make a strong case that, somebody looking at someone's weight, it's an outward sign, but things could be going on the inside. And Remnant was concerned with, number one, what's the number one sin of Remnant? Overweight.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It was appearance, and it was all about appearance, and it was all about size, and they thought over the whole world they'll rise. That's one of the poems I used to write a poem about that. But
wow. Yeah.
But yeah, it was shallow.
Yeah. It always amazed me when you bring up that point, how many times, and you didn't, this is what didn't make it to the promotional videos or teachings, but in the testimonies you'd hear online on Remnant Fellowship assemblies and their commute and their coming together. And, you'd have women, men and women getting up and say, hi, I'm so-and-so, and I'm from this place. And before I found this message, I was wallowing under 50 pounds of disobedience, 70 pounds of sin. They would make comments like that as if
80 pounds. Yes, that's right.
That is what was righteousness to them, was the external, as you mentioned so very well. That's a really great point.
And I picked up right off the bat in Remnant after several years in that there were, however somebody wants, I'm not judging people for lifestyles, but there were people that had apparently very obviously alternate lifestyles. I'll just put it that way. Mm-hmm. But because they were well-dressed, they put on the nice white shirts and the khaki pants and smiling the big smile. And they knew how to play the game of authority by pleasing Gwen. They knew who to please. You please the leaders, you please Gwen, you can get away with more sin.
Mm. Yeah.
As long as you're thin. Sorry, I'm like rhyming again. Can't help it.
But it's okay.
But that's the thing, that they knew how to play the game,
right?
And that bothered me to the 10th degree. I can't tell you how much that drove me insane, seeing that. And I would try to bring it up. I remember trying to bring things like that up to Gwen early on, even early on in the years, and saying, but it was very clear she was She was dead set on how the system worked, and obviously this was a church that was birthed through Waydown, a Christian faith based. You know, once again, I loosely use that term Christian for Waydown, but it was faith based weight loss program that's birthing this cult, and so she stuck to her guns with that,
right? Because that's what people wanted. That's what the draw was. I mean, you have all these, these struggling soccer moms in unhappy churches situations. Husbands don't like them. You know, they don't feel too great about themselves. And they, you know, they go to church and it doesn't seem. And then they hear somebody like Gwen come up and say, hey, you can have it all. You can lose weight. You can cut closer to God. Your husband could love you again. You got obedient children. Good grief. I mean, where do you sign up for this? You know?
Right.
That's how this movement took off, and to this day, still has its draw.
Right, it is the draw, and it's, you know, the weddings are the huge, you know, evangelistic tool, and the decorations. I call it a women's church nowadays, a women's movement, but we don't have to go into that kind of thing. But that's exactly, you know, it's the appearance, it is the weight loss. It pulls, you know, and Waydown was, you know, 98% women, and that was kind of the hook, right? And
sure,
to come in and you have the nice family, everyone's going to be well dressed and respectful, and they never see it coming.
No, they don't, and they didn't, and for years it went on until just spots in the feast, as the Bible says, started to be seen. You know, they began, Remnant began and Waydown began being noticed, but for all the wrong reasons, you know, beginning with a lot of Phil Williams reporting, which we, of course, are certainly owe a lot to. My initial research when I first began trying to find out about this woman came from one of his earliest broadcasts, way back before 911, I think. And I remember there was an interview in which Gwen's lawyer ushered her out of the room, in which she was being closely asked about her equating weight loss, the horrible deprivation of populaces of Holocaust survivors, their weight loss to American Christian diet success.
Right, right.
That was when I began to realize this is a lot more than weight down loss. But just prior to that, that's when I started losing. And I appreciate Phil Williams' input at that point. That's why I'm bringing it up. But through him and others, Remnant's and Waydown's fortunes began to get noised abroad, but in ways that they perhaps didn't want to. I know for every single positive one, for every single appearance you can get in places like NBC or the Tyra Show or something like that, there are many more places in which the broadcast journalism was getting a little bit asking too many questions. At that point, you know, when Gwen became under fire and the whole movement then became under fire, because she wasn't going to go into a fire alone. Okay. She was going to take them with him and make sure that she was going to be shown as the great protector of everybody. So during the Smith family tragedy, for example, I mean, that whole sad debacle, during all of that, I mean, I think that was a singular moment in which things began to really harden. And the authority line began to really firm up. And was there a moment during all of that in which you can recall that really shows how hardened they were going to get about that?
Well, and when you say hardened about that, can you be more specific?
Like I said, at this point, it had been religious and spiritual punishment and restriction was going to be placed upon anyone that was going to be, disobedient to Gwen or questioning. But when it became apparent that the entire Cobb County legal system and law enforcement and DA's office were going to start really putting Remnant through the leadership,
mm-hmm.
The Remnant leadership through the ringer. When that became something that they could no longer spin within themselves, and they began seeing an external enemy, my question is, was there a moment in which you could remember that Gwen began to really communicate to leadership that they need to be a lot more careful, a lot more nuanced, a lot more controlling?
Certainly, yes. There was a backing off, right? Because you had had them, you know, they're convicted of murder, right, and child abuse, and the police raid was a huge wake-up call for her. It's funny, I actually came within about 2 minutes from being caught and put into the room that day of the police raid. I could see it coming. I saw him coming. Mm. I was in the parking lot next door watching it.
Now, this is for those who are unaware, this is for the Way Down Workshop. Original offices there in
Seaborne Lane.
Seaborne Lane. And the Cobb County, in conjunction with, I think, with Tennessee or Tennessee State Police or somebody.
The Franklin Police Department.
Okay, they're Franklin. They raided the business offices for information.
Right. And looking for links between the church's teachings and the abuse that the child abuse case with Joseph and Sonia in Atlanta. So, right. That was, and I think his name's Detective Schweitzer was setting that up.
Yeah.
But, yes, sir. Right. They came in and, they corralled everybody in. Anybody in the building was, they came in with like SWAT units, and, anybody that was in the building at the time was corralled into the central meeting room that had no windows, and they took everyone's phones. And so they sat in there they were there all day.
Mm. And Gwen was there with them?
No, she was not.
Well, where was she at this point?
She was at Ashland at the moment.
Okay.
But yeah, I missed it. Me and a friend actually went to lunch right before they did it. And I actually saw a lot of them getting ready to go because they went to the same place me and my friend went. And I saw about 15, 20 like sheriffs, officers, people, guys coming in to get lunch before going on this. I didn't know what they were doing. And I was like, man, something's going on. So we drive back and they had just started the raid.
Hmm.
So I said, pull into the parking lot next door. And we just pulled in and watched it. But yeah, as far as when that happened, it was a wake up call. That was hugely, frightening to Gwen. And you know, there was also that instance where David Martin making that horrific, his showdown spanking speech,
right.
That I'm sure you remember. Which I was sitting in there live when it happened, and. I was extremely horribly nervous to sit through that. And he's on stage in the warehouse for the church services talking about spanking them over and over and over and over and over and over. He just kept saying over and over and over. And, but, you know, because so before all that, you know, these type abusive switches with glue stick type recommendations were widespread all throughout Remnant, right? And they had been doing all that, like we've been saying, up to that point. You know, using techniques, they would use techniques that are calculated not to leave bruises on children. But once this started happening, there was what we started seeing was this huge fear within all the members and the families, the fear of DCS coming to people's homes.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a constant topic in the meetings. I remember every single meeting, some of the women would be asking, you know, so-and-so reported me, or what should I do? You know, how do we treat these people when they come to our doors? Mm-hmm. So it had a massive impact on everyone. To be honest, it was actually pretty frightening to be in the church at the time. I didn't have children at the time, but I'm sure that was pretty frightening for these families that had young kids. And I want to tell you something, too, while I've on this interview, but there was another situation I've heard about that I'm not sure you ever heard about as far as abuse with the children, but this was something just very shockingly weird. But it was young baby treatment that happened, and I remember some of the women telling me afterwards there was a weird way women would put babies on a blanket, like in the home, and they would like place something that the baby, or, you know, very young baby shouldn't touch, like on the edges of the blanket around it. And when inevitably the baby reaches out for it, they smack their hands. Like, it was some sort of weird, cruel way to like train them. I just remember hearing that going, what in the world? I had never heard of anybody doing that.
Okay, so this is a baby that's what, several months old or 3 months old?
I don't remember exactly, but they said it would be babies, so it could be up to like 1-2 years old. Like that.
And they're going to be rolling around and moving and crawling. And
they'd put them on their back on a blanket, and so they would put something like, I don't know how it exactly worked, but something, keep in mind, I didn't witness this, but this is what the women told me. They said they would put something there that they don't want the baby to touch, like hot, you know, or something. And they, you know, and the, when the baby reaches out to it, they would smack its hand. Mm-hmm. And just like, it seems, besides pointless, it just seems cruel. Like they were trying to like train it at that age or something. Yeah, it was just
it's very odd. It's just like Pavlovian conditioning, you know, they're trying to condition them like they're like a little dog, you know? Right.
And the baby gets used to hearing no, except two. They, like you're saying, Pavlovian, they get used to hearing the word no, associating that with a little hand slap.
Right. Gosh. Yep. That sounds like good, solid Christian conditioning to me. You know, and right. The thing is, that kind of level of intrusion. I'm not going to say intrusion, because I have heard of that. I've heard of those sort of things going on.
Mm-hmm.
And whereas they're right borderline abusive, you know, it just goes to show that it was a concept. It was a tradition that was being circulated around Remnant for parents to emulate. Mm-hmm. And it just goes to show that, you know, that who in the world was, somebody at some level was introducing that. Somebody taught these women to set up their children for this kind of conditioning very deliberately, very intentionally. And if it happened once, it's happened several times, different places, may still be happening now for all we know. But the point is, it just shows how a group of people can go in and do things and just imitate each other without ever really considering, you know, whether that direction was actually correct or not.
Right.
Wow. Incredible. Yeah. So as that went by, so obviously they, you know, the moment came in which they were, the moment of truth came in which sadly Joseph and Sonia were found guilty, basically beating the child to death. And that point, of course, became another crisis point for the church. They had to realize, you know, well, the Smiths certainly are innocent. Let's just go ahead and stand by them. And to this day, that website still runs. TheSmithsAreInnocent.com, I believe it is. That's still going on right now. They're still banging the drum for them.
It still does. And that, to me, is one of the most disturbing things ever. The fact that they're treating a murderer like some sort of like Apostle Paul in prison. Every time Joseph or Sonia calls in, that they just go crazy. Cheers, which is often.
Are they still calling in?
Yes, not as much. Elizabeth does, because Elizabeth, it's not factoring into her Remnant master plan, and that's probably something else we should talk about at some point. But it doesn't factor in as much because of their. She's been trying to distance herself from a lot of the negativity of the Gwyn regime.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So she doesn't really, it's like when one of the older ones like Eldon or Amy Stites or somebody says, hey, we haven't had Joseph call in a while, we should do that. It's not coming from Elizabeth anymore. She does not have stake in that. She honestly doesn't want to be a part of it, in my estimation.
Right.
But they're still called in. And a lot of the youth have grown up with these people being treated as
heroes.
Heroes. And I have no doubt that they will, you know, when the day comes that they pass away, I'm sure they will treat them as, you know, they'll probably be kids wearing Joseph Smith t-shirts and Remnant.
Yeah. Or martyrs.
Martyrs.
As martyrs for the true Christian faith.
Yeah. And they're in there for abuse, horrible abuse of their children.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of a really sad thing to see how good can be called evil and evil can be called good. I believe there's a verse in the Bible about that, and that those who do such things are going to be under divine woes. You know, when the Bible says in a verse that woe unto you, woe unto that, you better be listening, because it means what it says. There will be accountability. There will be a judgment coming for that. And it's just, again, just a part of what's going on there, Remnant. And as you went through, as things kept going, you had to keep hiding, I guess. You know, you said you were along with it from the beginning, but at what point? I mean, there's a certain amount of dissonance, cognitive dissonance, as the well-known term is used, that people can deal with. Cognitive dissonance is basically your ability to handle or manage two very contradictory situations in your life where you're seeing one thing, but you know differently. And you're struggling with that, with what confusion and what questioning that brings to you. The dissonance is what can drive you to do things differently or start reconsidering where you are. So what was the moment, do you think, or moments in which you began realizing, like, this place isn't what it is, and I need to be looking to get out? You had certainly seen enough to disillusion you, to make you think twice, to make you wonder what's going on, but you always deferred to your mother's authority, to Gwen's example, to her persuasion, and to some of her what she was doing as proof that you should stick around, that really there's no place else you could really go at that point either. Was there a specific moment, a crisis moment, in which you began to realize that this place is not where I need to be, and I need to split, I need to walk?
Well, I mean, if you really wanted to hear the full, you know, it's a couple of minutes of me saying, you know, I started with losing trust in organized religion before Remnant. Okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's... I think that's fair to say, because we had grown up in churches, and I losing trust in organized Christianity specifically, because I'd witnessed hypocrisy, right, in so many of the various institutions that I'd been in, and seeing the people and also the youth groups that I'd been in, probably especially, and hearing things from my parents or whatever. And, you know, seeing people fail on the straight and narrow path, right? And, I encountered a lot of situations in high school and before. I had been personally kind of abused by some of these Christian youth group guys, in a way, bullied.
Right.
So I'd lost some trust seriously. And I would say, like, as far as when Remnant started, so I already had this jade inside, but when Remnant started, I still put myself in a category of naive, because I feel like, you know, that's why I have kind of moved towards a different name. I go by a different name now, but I felt like Michael Shamblin to me was, you know, the naive person who was gullible, who went along with what Gwen was saying. I was easily controlled. And I was constantly, though, why I would say it's not just one specific thing, I felt like I was constantly discovering things, you know, every day, every week, which didn't seem to line up.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I was constantly in situations where, you know, the church would be keeping things from me. You know, like the Joseph Smith thing, you know, she was not letting me see the autopsy photos, right? So that was, you know,
But she had them.
She had them, and she would never show me the autopsy pictures.
They're not pretty.
Of like, Joseph Smith when was all happening, and she would just say, it's far too hard for you to look at, but just trust me on it. And I didn't get to see anything until much, much later. And but it would be things of that nature of them keeping things from me, hiding things. And I started, you know, I was constantly seeing secret sins. I could see people get away with things, which I was the type of person that, you know, when I went into something, I felt like, okay, we're going to do it, right? And if everybody's going to agree on this, we're going to do it. And I would see people getting away with things, and I started calling them cracks in the walls of Jerusalem. And I would see people, you know, running off and having secret affairs and still getting away with it and getting back on stage and smiling and lifting their hands, you know, and I'm working. This is while I'm working on worship songs for the same church.
Yeah.
Right. And so Gwen was growing increasingly controlling as well over time. So that kind of started becoming a different situation for me, where I had to start thinking on my own at that point, because I was starting to, you know, be run through the cleaners as well. It wasn't just these other people, you know, that were attacking Remnant. It was people, you know, criticizing or whatever. I felt like I was being used by Gwen.
Mm-hmm.
And I started sensing that she, control was everything to her. And there was the monitoring getting started. And I was tired of being lied to. And that kind of, it slowly turned me into somebody that, you know, was very much jaded with Remnant.
Yeah.
By the 2000s. And I remember one, you know, there were a couple of times when seeing some affairs that were happening that really damaged me. But I saw Gwen, I saw her real nature come out during, you know, things like when I was writing the musical Hosanna Symphony. She afterwards confessed to me that she had jealousy. She actually got in the car with me and confessed. And that's the only time I've ever heard her confess anything.
She was jealous. Jealous of you?
She confessed that she had jealousy. She said, I had talked to God about it and I've repented, but she said, I've had to fight jealousy of that. Because there was a lot of people writing in on the Remnant website that were excited about that musical. And they felt like they were changing, and counseling was going down at the time. And she, you know, she did mention that to me, but it was the control of her, though. Her control is what it kept growing. And you could see her changing over time. And I felt stuck.
Yeah. Were part of any of those affairs that you saw, did they involve her?
No, but I know it was David Shamblin had questions about Joseph Langston.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't like Joseph constantly being over at Gwen's trying to help her, like a handyman type person, spending his entire life, you know, around Gwen. I think that bothered his wife as well. He was trying to be like our second father in a way.
Right.
Because David Shamblin had left by then. I know that bothered him. I don't think they ever had an affair early on, but I do think she had an affair with Joe Laura. She did have an affair with Joe Laura.
Oh, sure.
But, yeah. No, it wasn't her. It was other people, but it was people that were significant that would shock people in Remnant even today.
Right. Because of course, this is the place where divorce doesn't happen. There's only purity in leadership. Right. And obviously these people weren't very pure, and they weren't above divorce either. It happened.
Right. But it bothered me that they could still smile.
Right.
That's what it was, the fakeness that bothered me.
Right.
It was the fact that they could still come back and talk to when they could get up and testify. And I don't know if I had missing that gear or whatever, but they could get up and testify and like the perfect angel. And that kind of stuff really messed me over.
Yeah. It was the hypocrisy. The rank hypocrisy of how they get up and smile and proclaim themselves pure and free from sin. And yet certainly you and others knew they were secretly having a little tryst somewhere along the line.
Yeah. Right. And I know that I'm not the first person to see this. This has happened a million times over 2,000 years. But
Right. But still, it's still impacting. You're a young man looking up at these people and you're realizing they're supposed to be your examples, and they haven't been really good examples at all.
But it wasn't just that. I also had issues with, I feel like we got a tough brunt of, you know, like, for instance, the family splitting, you know, phenomenon in Remnant, right? Mm-hmm. And the isolationism and, you know, discouraging people to go to other churches. So, you know, when I get married in 2002, right, you know, we're just like they teach, they're urging disassociation with outside family members. And so that immediately caused issues with my ex-wife's family. And then Gwen, you know, felt like I needed to go over there and almost confront them before we even got married. And you can imagine how that's a bad way to start off with your father-in-law.
Yeah.
Me having to go over there and just be like, and Gwen had coached me and counseled me to say, not to ask them that I'm going to marry their daughter, but she said, go over there and tell them you're going to marry their daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was coached specifically to say things like that. It immediately causes trouble, as you can imagine, because I'm coming in an on the offensive.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then we have the strange teachings of Remnant, especially in the early years, of not going to outside funerals or weddings within other churches. Because that's you're condoning their teach, you're supporting your presence supports their teachings, right? Mm-hmm. So that was being talked about in a kind of a sometimes somewhat confusing way, but she was teaching us to do that, and we ended up not going to the funeral of my ex's grandfather, and he was one of the most respected, you know, old style Christian men in Nashville. I mean, everyone in the city knew this guy. He was in his late 80s. He played golf. He was probably the definition of a, you know, Church of Christ old, you know. Everybody came to the funeral, and we're counseled because of Remnant we're not going to step foot into the church that they're having the ceremony at, but we'll show up at the burial. And her father was furious at me. I mean, he's a very smart man himself. He's got a master's in psychology. He was furious. And you think about, and then I see years later, Gwen start backing off of that. Mm-hmm. And saying, well, maybe it's okay sometimes, you know, situational and what. Like it was just, I saw the damage that was coming from these, it was harm being called, and it wasn't just me, and I'm not just talking about me personally, it happened to a lot of people.
Right.
And they're going in there and they're causing harm for these people that are simply trying to help them. And
yeah.
I thought people were more hardcore about those things in the early years of Remnant. I know it still happens, but it was very highly pushed by Remnant, you know, this family estrangement type process, and you know, it was creating distance between people and their families. It was isolating people from the outside world. They're encouraging people to cut ties with people that truly love you, and you can only be dependent on Remnant and Gwen and the leaders, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And you know, there's so many. I mean, it's not one thing that caused me to not believe it. It's thousands of small painful things.
Paper cuts, basically. I mean, you were pricked 100 different ways, and you managed somehow to slap all those band-aids on you and keep it going until she hit an artery. And then that's when, or not she, but the whole situation. I mean, your mother certainly principally was the power behind all that, but the whole culture, everything you saw began to slowly sever, you know, major mm-hmm. arteries here, you know. You hit a carotid right. artery, you're going to bleed out pretty quickly. And you're, right. and you're getting painfully close to that. And that, and all that warping, and in the midst of all that despair you felt, I'm sure was part of the example that kind of really, really tripped you up during all those years. You're there trying to do the right thing, and you're seeing everybody doing the wrong.
Right. And I saw myself on a kind of, you can't see me doing it, but I'm using my hands doing like a V here. I could see me and Gwen veering off by that yeah. point.
Yeah. Yeah. It was starting at that point to start shattering the connection. Right. I mean, I remember the initial, I'm sorry, it slipped from my mind, but the initial start, the start of the HBO series begins with a couple whose daughter got involved with a Remnant member family there. And then it seems like almost the way he confronted them was the same way you were counseled to handle Elle's family. Exactly the same. Sounds like that song that came from the same Gwen Champlin playbook.
I believe it did. Yeah, I think you're talking about Delaney and Jackson. Yeah, yes. the Wingard family, right?
Wingard, right, yeah. Like I said, I'm getting old. I'm sorry.
No, you're not. Yeah, yeah. You're honestly, I'm like amazed by how you do these interviews and still do your preaching. It's actually pretty impressive. You also, by the way, can I just say you did an amazing job on HBO.
Well, thank you.
I would say you kind of anchored it, if that's a good way to put it.
Well, I probably would say that. Yeah.
Yeah, I know you're a modest person. You wouldn't lift yourself up, but in my opinion, I would say you anchored it, and you kind of gave a lot of the. It really needed that. I felt like because there's a lot. You've got a lot of young people and things like that talking. It was much needed for that. So I appreciate you doing that, speaking out.
Well, thank you. And like I said, I've when they first approached me, this was years before, by the way. It wasn't like 6 months before, 6 months after the, or 6 months prior to that the plane crash. This has been an ongoing thing for several years.
I didn't know it was that far before the plane crash.
Oh, it was a long time before that. Several years before the plane crash that I was first approached. I was first approached, and I was asked, and the producers there will tell you readily, you know, and a couple of them, you know, one in phone calls, and I know there's one thing on YouTube in which one of the producer assistants said the same thing that they know that they would never have gotten off the ground if they had not gotten somebody who they call gatekeepers to the mm-hmm. entire ex-Remnant mm-hmm. world, and they mm-hmm. approached me, and once it took a while because I've been approached by so many different places to do similar things that I would soil myself to touch again because of how scandalously lurid they wanted to make these documentaries. And I have no desire for that. Anything I do for redemptive reasons. I want to see people touched. I want to see people's lives changed. I want something good to come out of what anything I involved with. And when they approached me and I sent it and they finally convinced me that they were going to do on the right up and up, that's when they started flying me in all over the place, different places for different interviews. Mm-hmm. There's probably several hours easily. I know there's several, maybe two or three days worth of interviews they got that maybe 99% of it never made it to the finished product here. But they just chose basically sound bites. It's like it's the media. I expected
that. I know, yeah. But it still comes across in a good word.
Yeah. They did
a really good job.
They did.
I felt.
I think they did. I told them to be start with. I don't want anything but like, and that's as I share with you. I don't want anything but the truth. I'm not getting involved with anything that tries to make a big deal, and make like tell all these juicy stories of scandal. I have no interest in that. None. I only want truth told, and it's always. And I appreciate the fact that you see that, Michael, because that's what I'm all about. That's what I've always been about. I had no interest.
Right.
And making things any worse, just telling the truth.
I 100% agree. I always felt like they don't need. Remnant itself is a basket case. Like, you could not make up the stories, but Remnant does anyway. I always felt like the truth is enough to drop Remnant.
Right. They talk about the fruit. Well, you know what? I could have talked about the fruit. I know all kinds of things, stuff that goes on there. And I could have said a lot more, but I had no interest in trotting that all out because it wasn't helping.
Sensationalism and things of that nature.
Yeah, right. I got no interest in that. I want you, and I think you understand that, but I want Remnant and Elizabeth and everybody to know I had no interest in telling lies about you. And everything I have said, I'm on footage for. I've got absolute, record on, has been based on truth. That's the reason why Gwen sued me twice and lost both times, because every single time I was brought to court by her for slander and all this other stuff, it was on the basis of something I said, which was based on factual truth. And in America, hopefully still today, America, you can still have an opinion and it can still be spoken. Mm-hmm. We still have freedom of the press. We still have freedom of speech. And that's what this really came down to. Gwen, just try getting some very bad press for her covered. And the courts made it very clear to her. The Supreme Court of Tennessee made it very clear that what I was doing and saying was protected constitutional speech. They didn't have to agree with it, but it was nothing in the least bit slanderous. And I had so much information I was drawing upon to make those statements. So, yeah.
That's wild. You had those, what was it, two defamation lawsuits. Defamation, I think. And then didn't she? And I think she also admitted at some point in a deposition that, she actually admitted that the church influences Google search results. Right. And they're, manipulating those things. And
so even though you were having those cracks in the wall of Jerusalem, as you so well just put it, Michael, you still seem to have it all. I mean, you were living, apparently, to so many people, a life that I think anyone would rightly be envious of. I mean, you were feted as a great musician. Your authority was unquestioned. A lot of people really recognized, however, that the true giftedness that you had and were expressing it, so as you said. So so you went along with it for the ride, and you're part of that authority line we've been talking about. But you did mention, though, that the cracks were coming, and I think one of the biggest ones you mentioned was that you felt that Gwen's hypocrisy was probably the biggest one that you had. I mean, she promoted being under authority more than anything else, being under appropriate submission to this leader, that leader. But when was she ever really submissive to your father's nominal spiritual headship over her?
Where was she?
When was she ever really submissive to your father?
She was in a way, I think, like I said before, but I always felt it was a, we've already mentioned, being submissive to a point where it doesn't suit her personal spiritual journey. So as far as my father, she was fine as long as he was furthering her. I talk about his involvement with Wade, and I've mentioned that on my social media. A lot of people in Remnant were never taught that, his huge amount of involvement. He was the one helping her get started becoming the famous Gwen Shamblin. And why would she get rid of that? She mentioned later in her sermons about why would a master get rid of a slave that's serving them? And I'm not saying that David always acted like a slave to Gwen, but she had the ability to undercut him constantly. It was always on her mind. And that's what people don't understand. What I'm hearing, the smiles they're seeing from me at Remnant, we're going straight from that to going to listen to Gwen yap about how and complain about how horrific David is at lunch. And it was always I don't know if the word's not dichotomy, but it was two different lifestyles she was living. She was putting on the picture of the perfect preacher when she was in front of people. And the real Gwen, which is what I've been trying to get out to the world this whole time, was not that way. All these people think they knew Gwen, but I'm just telling people behind closed doors, the real her was pushing David out, right? She was like you can even look into the fact that he had become effectively invisible, right?
Right.
In the church, him leaving the church, he understood what was going on. He also was not overly aggressive. He wasn't going to try to fight her over it. But he was seeing through what she was, partly because he didn't represent the ideals she was preaching, right? And he had the weight issue, which could have been embarrassing to her. But, in her misinterpretation of Christianity, right? And, a lot of people have talked about that, and you've hit on that a lot as well. But it was in word only, expressing love and devotion. It was in word only servitude to him.
Yeah.
But there was the deeper involvement or something close to substance or true caring or true serving, like from the heart, that wasn't happening in the least.
Oh man. And that's, yeah. Marriages go that way. They become their relationships become more business oriented. It's kind of like more of like I've often described a detente. They've just come to an uneasy kind of ceasefire over things, and then there comes to a point in some relationships in which one person realizes that they're just got to settle for the way things are, and unfortunately, that's how relationships work. So it's just a sad thing to hear. Having to hear that
I'm just saying
you ever had to behold that growing up and seeing that in your home.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so I was always having to hear both sides to everything. And that was how I described myself to a lot of people. Like I was on both sides. I've seen it from the side of somebody in the fog and the haze of Remnant when you're following Gwen, the charismatic leader, and hyped up to follow her. And I've also been on the side of seeing through her and working against her.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I saw the same thing with David Shamblin.
Right. Right. Were there any really major decisions during those years in which you're going through the media scrutiny and then the Smith family tragedy, and then things just seemed to escalate in terms of how the media was catching view or casting their judgment upon you? And of course, you had that mean Mexican guy in Cleveland, Tennessee, casting his own aspersions on you in the middle of all of that. I'm sure that Gwen had her amen corner, the elders there with her, helping to make, helping her make a decision, so to speak. Was there any actual times in which major decisions were actually deflected by elders because of having to intervene? Or did she just pretty much write everything and have them just rubber stamp it?
When she decided to do something, they would not argue.
Mm-hmm.
There were men at a certain point, and I was seeing this, that would possibly try to steer her away from doing certain things, and the outcome for those men was never good. I can give you an example. Since he has claimed to be a leader, I'll use his name. I wouldn't do that to the typical member, but I'll give you an example. Kent Smith, one of the leaders, when I felt like Remnant was probably around its strongest that it was, she had set up a large number of men imposing men who were kind of the columns of Remnant. They were the small group leaders. She was setting them up as such. But we keep in mind, this is still absolute authoritarianism. And she's not accountable. That's the problem. And so she would, and so Kent, I remember there being an issue. He had an office in the Waydown building, like I did. When there were still a lot of people working at the Waydown building on Seaboard Lane. And he was one of the leaders. His wife worked there, Regina. And I remember him not getting into it with Gwen, but starting to, he would go over to Ted's office and talk about, you know, so-and-so, Gwen is, are we being too lenient? Are we allowing the strugglers, you know, the group of people that hasn't lost their weight? Are we being too lenient on this? He would have questions about Gwen's leadership style. And then about a month later, he's having to apologize to Gwen. And I got on her, I actually got on her computer on the weekend sometimes when nobody was there and looked at her email.
Oh, really?
I would sneak in there. And I remember seeing emails. I actually took photos of them. I have emails from Regina, from Kent, just apologizing to Gwen. Like, I'm so sorry. He didn't do anything to Gwen, but he felt need to send this long apology. And Gwen kept all of these emails. When Ted apologized, when Candace, Sanjay, Anger apologized, I took snapshots of her email. She was keeping them all like a file.
Yeah.
So she would have Kent just, so whatever she did to Kent, I remember him having to come in there and be confronted by Gwen. He was trying to steer her. And so then she would have to put them in their place.
Yeah.
Because it was her leadership. This is a, in my opinion, woman run church movement. She's running it. Her daughter's going to take over. She did not want men threatening that.
Right. Because she already had it pretty well established. Well, well, Dave was there that she was the one that wore the pants in the church.
Right.
Yeah.
It was pathetic in my mind because I would see them get up on stage, however, and she loved to have the men and everybody stand up on stage at the end of each Remnant service and waving their hands for the songs, you know, putting up a solid wall of people, right, that are supporting her.
Right.
She was telling them where to stand on the stage.
Right.
It's down to that level. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
She was telling them how to dress, the men how to dress.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was ridiculous. And so to me, it was pathetic seeing these men just groveling.
Mm-hmm.
It was pathetic to me, because I was in trouble quite a bit with her because I was push the limits, but so there was no solid male figure in my life that was standing up to Gwen, believe me.
Right.
David Shamblin would, but she also badmouthed David Shamblin every chance she got.
Right. Yeah. So with that kind of example of complete hypocrisy in terms of, you know, making it seem as if they were, as if she was this great submissive servant prophet of God, all the while completely controlling the imagery, the narrative, the public image, her persona, and not really caring behind closed doors or out away from the Klieg lights that she actually treated people pretty shabbily, especially those who she was supposed to be admission to. That was just not a great example to grow up under. And I'm sure that was not lost on other people either.
No, it's a confusing example at best.
Yeah.
And I think people, it's a pretty well-known phenomenon of the PKs, right? The preacher kids. I think that's where that does come from. And I always considered myself and Michelle Elizabeth like one of the most notable PKs in the country. I mean, we're up there, right?
Yeah.
You've got Franklin Graham and all these people, but I mean, we're up there with one of the wilder ones, put it that way.
Right. And you're right. That's a dynamic of life that 90% of people looking at you never quite get. You know, as a minister, I understand that. I've never had children, but I have all kinds of friends of mine who have had children. Mm-hmm. That's a level of existence that a lot of people never really consider. Preachers, ministers' children are held to such a standard, expect to act a certain way. Yet at the same time, they have to endure the kind of I don't know how to describe it. I try to put a word to it. They have to deal with this horrible tension within themselves of having to balance, you know, juggle those balls to look the part and act the part and be the part while at the same time watching those who demand it act completely opposite. That's a horrible, horrible thing. And it's an example that I believe certainly impacted you.
I mean, yes, it did. But I would say a lot of people in, you know, modern society would, and they've known for decades. I mean, the preacher kids typically are put in kind of a negative light because they typically are the wild ones. That's been my experience because we've seen hundreds and hundreds of preachers right through Way Down and over the years. Typically, everybody's kind of keeping an eye on them because they know they're going to end up being the wildest kid in the church or something like that.
And
if I've seen it once, I've seen it 100 times. But I think it was probably confusing to some people in Remnant because we're lifted up like we are royalty, like you said, you know, the unquestioned authority, the power, like we're Remnant royalty. But I think it gets lost on people that they forget that we're still preacher kids.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And children, like I said, there's no room for error in a minister's home. But in a place like Remnant, where you have Gwen Chamblin as your mother, and her being atop a pyramid of her creation, where everyone was trying to buy into it and support it, that gave you certainly a lot more leverage and a lot more height than perhaps the average preacher kid. Because listen, you're part of this absolutist group in which your word is law, and not many preacher kids get that kind of thing. And you know, some probably would love it, but that is an incredible dizzying height to be at your age.
Sure, but you have to understand it was constant constant problems. You know, Remnant was, it wasn't just a church of just great things happening, right? It was the, if you can call it, quote unquote, persecution. I mean, from the start, it was a firecracker. I mean, we were like huddling in the warehouse watching Channel 5 air the ad during the Super Bowl. I mean, it's not like it was some wonderful, easy place to be a part of, you know, be in some high position. There's always the threats. Gwen kept people also in a state of constant drama. So there was never a day or a week where somebody wasn't trying to attack Gwen. I say that in quotes, because I think some of it was over dramatic, but there was never a time when she wasn't, hated by people, somebody sending mail, she had the death threats, right? You know, our meetings at the Way Down building in those early years of Remnant, we had to close the curtains because she was getting a death threat that somebody's going to snipe her through the window at night. And we would meet at night and close the curtains. Mm-hmm. So I'm in my early 20s. You have to understand, and we've got the people picketing outside. We had that going on. We had the news going on. Where we went everywhere, we were, you know, there was a period of time where you're like ducking your head when you're walking into a restaurant. You're afraid somebody's going to know you're Remnant or something.
Yeah,
because it was, everybody does, in this area, Franklin, Brentwood, everybody knows who Gwen Chamblin is and Remnant. And so it wasn't all just sunshine and rainbows. It was, and you had a lot of weird counseling situations. Remnant drew some of the weird of the weird. And
yeah. That's how it usually goes. You draw people, you make great claims, and you draw people with great problems.
Right, and then, of course, you have the murder case, which doesn't help, you know, the Joseph and Smith thing, to add to that. It just, and then police raid on the building, you know, so several years into it, they were getting a police raid. It, you know, it was quite the place. You know, there was never a dull moment.
Thanks for listening today as we explore just where are we going. Our prayer is that you have been encouraged and strengthened, and if necessary, challenged in your daily journey through life. Jesus is coming. You can fall with the night, or you can rise with the sun. The choice is yours. You can email us with questions and comments at feedback@spiritwatch.org. And if you need urgent personal spiritual help, email us at help@spiritwatch.org. We look forward to hearing from you. Please follow our podcasting at our Facebook page and our website at spiritwatch.org. This podcast is a production of Spirit Watch Ministries, taking heed that no man deceives you.
Remember, all I'm offering is the truth, nothing more.